Welcome, everybody. We are back once again to another podcast here on studentomics.com. I'm your host, MD, and today on the line with me is Daniel of sweatingthebigstuff.com. How's it going today?
Great. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. For anybody that doesn't know about you, could you perhaps share us a little intro about yourself?
Sure. I'm Daniel. I write for Sweating the Big Stuff. I started the site probably about 2 years ago. And I try and write about things that will really make a difference. So instead of saving about 20 cents with clipping coupons, I try and give some advice about helping your retirement funds, how to grow things interest-free with Roth IRAs, and the best moves for student loans. So it's really looking at the big picture rather than nitpicking and going the frugality route.
Awesome, awesome. I love it. And you told me in a prior conversation that you're now full-time with your blogging?
At the moment, I'm full-time. I don't know if it's by choice, but it's actually going really well, and I'm having a lot of fun being able to focus on the blog and write a little bit more, and I think the quality of the writing has really increased. So I'm having a great time, and I really didn't even know I was going to love this break from work.
So how'd you end up becoming a full-time blogger for the time being?
Well, so I have been living in D.C. working for a car insurance company, doing some programming, and my fiance lives out here, and after we got engaged, we decided it was time to hop over to the other side of the country and start our new life together. So I guess just the way it kind of worked out, but I'm loving it so far.
Nice, nice. How'd you even get started into the whole blogging world?
You know, I was reading like Yahoo Finance, and then I started merging over to personal finance blogs. I think the first one I ever read was Simple Dollar. And as I kind of like got a little more integrated into the community, I started reading more and more blogs about personal finance, and I decided it's time to like throw my hat in the ring, start my own thing. I didn't really know what I was doing at all. I had like a blogger blog at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And then slowly I worked my way over to WordPress, and I've just been having an amazing time doing it and such great people to interact with.
So how did you get your blog in front of readers?
A lot of commenting on other people's blogs, trying to promote it. It seems like a long time ago now, trying to get all that stuff done. But I think the Acadia has been a really great help. Catching on with them right at the beginning was a big boost for me to be able to be one of the first ones and have people come to me for advice. I think that's a big change that I've seen over the past year and a half.
So let's say I were to start a personal finance blog today, in middle of August here. What advice would you give to me if I wanted to get my blog like off the ground?
Don't do it. It's so hard to start a personal finance blog. There's so many people doing it, and if you don't have the absolute passion, if I can tell you you don't do it and you still want to do it, then it probably means you're in a good spot. There's just so many of them out there, but if you have the passion to be able to write every day without expecting any income, I'd know for the first, like, 8 or 9 months I didn't make a penny, and I was just spending money on advertising and trying to get my theme set up and my website looking exactly the way I wanted. I was trying to add value to the users, but I really wasn't making anything. All I was doing was commenting on other people, submitting my site to carnivals and trying to get in front of these other readers, these other bloggers, so they would link back to me and be paying attention. And those were my first readers, were other bloggers. And being able to grow, find like a little group and be able to grow up with them, because they'll help you a lot.
So when did you first start to see some like real money come into your blog?
It was probably after around 9 months I made like my first $50 sale. Super excited about it. Didn't know I could make any money on this stuff. So I'll take whatever I can get. Maybe it paid for hosting for the first couple months. And then I started reaching out. I started hearing more from advertisers and realized that this could really be a business, much more than what I expected, which would just be a little bit of a guide for people. But I realized that this could really definitely turn into a nice online business venture.
Cool. So now that you're full-time with your online ventures, like how do you budget your money? Because I know personally that the income from a blog is very irregular. It could be making good money 1 month, and the next month you're you can't even afford dinner. So like, how do you budget with this irregular income that you have now?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very different from what I have been doing, which is getting the money from a regular job and the side income when it comes in. So that was all extra. Now it's not the extra anymore. Now it's kind of my main income. So I try and stick to a regular budget like I had, and I'll stick a lot of extra into this kind of blogger emergency fund. So it's not my typical emergency fund, which is a little bit different, but it's kind of my extra savings. So I'm not trying to, if I make $2,000 a month, I'm not, and I typically spend $1,000, I'm not going to try and do that anymore. Even if I'm under budget, I'm not just going to take that extra $1,000 and spend it. I'm going to put a little extra into savings so that if there is a month where I'm not making as much, I'll be able to rely on that. I think that's been a really big help for me in this first couple months.
Cool. One thing that interests me a lot is productivity and getting things done, because my problem is my schedule is just all over the map. Some days I'm up all night, the next day I sleep in till noon. It kind of kills me, to be honest. How do you stay focused, and like, how do you avoid the time wasters, and how are you productive throughout the day?
Absolutely. There's a ton of things to distract me. The thing is that I'm able to do now is really set aside a couple blocks of time each day. If I'm setting aside an hour to write articles, and an hour to email, and an hour to comment, it kind of helps me focus a little bit and just get down to one task and try and block out everything for that hour, half hour, whatever it is, whatever block works for you. But as long as I can get something done in that little period of time, I think it's been a really big help for me.
And you told me you wake up every day at 7 in the morning?
Yeah, I mean, even with this blogger lifestyle, I know if, when you think of a typical blogger, they're going to wake up at 12, write a little bit, hang out. I've really been trying to keep things a little bit normal. Living on the West Coast, if I wake up at 10 o'clock, it's already 1 o'clock on the East Coast and missed half the day. So
oh, yeah.
I've been trying to keep something similar to an East Coast time zone here in L.A. But yeah, if I can get up at 7, get things done, it feels really great to know that I have the rest of the day to either spend writing or just hanging out, because I've done so much earlier in the day.
That's awesome. How would you compare life on the West Coast compared to the East Coast?
Oh, it's so nice here. It's like 80 degrees every day, sitting by the pool. Everyone's so nice. Oh, it's not even a fair comparison. There's no humidity. It's just not even fair.
So have you spent a winter there yet?
No. But I came out here maybe 2 Januaries ago, and we went to the beach, which is a little bit different from what I'm typically doing, bundling up in D.C. So
yeah, I don't think you went to the beach in D.C. in January.
No, it's not very hard. It's a little hard to complain out here.
You find that makes you more productive or less? Because I'm not sure how I would react to being able to go to the beach in January.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot pushing me to go outside every day, which is nice because it's a little easier to be active and work out a little bit, which is definitely good for me, because I know a lot of bloggers, once they get into blogging, they're kind of sitting at home trying to get as much done as possible. But I love the weather here, and it's just so easy to go outside and get a little motivated to do something.
So do you see yourself staying on the West Coast, or do you ever plan on coming back to the cold?
Right now the plan is to stay here. I mean, with this weather, it's so hard to say I'd want to go back. I mean, I hate the humidity, and I hate the having to shovel snow, and I love the fact that life is behind me. And I'll go visit, but I'm not shoveling snow anymore.
Hey, shoveling snow is a good workout.
That's true.
Especially at 6 in the morning. So your blog is sweating the big stuff. So could you guys share with us, like, what are some of the big things that you're saving for, or maybe, like, what's in your plans in the near future?
So the things I'm saving for, probably mostly, even if I'm not, I don't have a savings account specifically for this, but I know in the future these are the things I'm going to want. I think a house is a really big one, and I know that the housing market has been crazy, and I'm not even close to being ready to buy. But I know that the more I save now, the more I'll have later, and the bigger down payment I'm going to be able to make. Another one is retirement. I'm 24 years old, and for some reason, I love saving for retirement.
You got another 41 years to go, right?
I know, right? Hopefully, I can cut that down, retire a little bit early. But it just seems like I know with compounding interest, if I save now, I'm not just saving $5,000 a year now in my Roth IRA, but with compounding interest that's really going to start growing and picking up steam. And that's what I'm really excited for. So I know that by getting ahead now and stuffing those retirement accounts, it's going to pay big dividends for me in the future.
So when it comes to saving for the big stuff, where do you find that many 20-somethings go wrong?
I think right when you graduate college, there's not enough nobody really teaches about personal finance in college. Nobody teaches about budgeting. And when you step out into the real world and all of a sudden you have more money coming in, a lot of people think that they can just start spending and, like, people get nice new apartments and it's time to buy a car, so let's spring for something fancy to impress our friends. And I went the opposite route. I think a lot of people just need to kind of keep that college lifestyle. And you don't have to eat ramen noodles every day, but if you just stay with a roommate even, then that can cut down a lot on cost in that first year or two of real life employment. And that's a ton of extra money that you're spending. So I think I spent about $700 my first year out of college on an apartment when my friends were spending about $1,300. So that's $600 a month.
Wow.
Which is mind-boggling. That's over $7,000 a year that I can use towards savings, whereas they're using it once and they kind of don't really appreciate it.
So I wrote an ebook a while ago about renting versus owning a home. Where do you stand on that? Where do you stand on that? Do you believe you should try to rent for as long as possible, or should you get into a home ownership right away?
If you can afford the home ownership and all the costs, and I know a lot of people don't, they buy and then they realize how many costs are associated with it. Now, obviously, people are saying it's a great time to buy. If you can actually afford it, then great. But if you're thinking that you're going to be struggling to make these payments and you don't like the idea of the debt hanging over your head for 30 years or something, keep renting, because if it's cheaper, it's cheaper. And if that's the way the math works out, that's great.
What about cars? Where do you stand on cars? Do you think that one should buy a new car or use a...
I just went through this process about a month ago after I moved out here, and I knew that I was going to be buying a used car. I had no interest in buying a new car and paying the sticker price. I mean, these cars are very expensive nowadays, and I ended up buying a used 2007 Hyundai Elantra, and it's a fantastic car. I love it. It's got great ratings, and I can't imagine spending another $10,000 on a car when I can get something with a couple miles that I'm still going to have this car for a nice 5-6 years, but I'm not paying a huge price. And a lot of people who like the new cars, they like leasing them, which is probably the worst thing you can do, I think.
Yeah, I've been told to never lease a car.
Exactly.
So when it comes to your banking, I noticed that you've been writing about ING Direct. Is this who you do your banking with?
Absolutely. I used to have my primary bank was Bank of America, but they just made me so angry, and the customer service isn't nearly what I want it to be. And so I switched over to ING for almost everything, and except the only thing I kept was a bank account so that people could transfer me money, and it was very convenient for other people. But I started using ING, and their customer service is fantastic. You call them up, and they say, "Hi, how can I help you save your money?" And I love hearing that when I call up sometimes. Just to hear that, because I love it. And now they got some new features going on. They're starting to give you paper checks. So really they're transitioning into a primary bank, whereas in the past they've kind of been a secondary bank for some people. They've got great savings rates. I think right now they're at 1% for their saving accounts, which isn't much, but it definitely beats the competition. I know Bank of America has something absurdly low, like 0.05%, which is really not really a savings account. I think ING has their checking accounts has a better savings interest rate than Bank of America.
Yeah, it's funny because I always promote ING on my side in Studenomics because, I mean, because I'm here in Canada, I'm here in Toronto, and so I got the account, so I got a free checking account. It's very easy to use. I got the physical checks, as you mentioned. Interest rates, they're a bit higher, but interest rates all across right now are nothing special.
Right.
I just find that it's so much more convenient to be using ING than some of the other banks.
Yep, and they've got a great interface, and they're kind of fun to use. I don't know. They make everything really easy to be transferring money, and I love their system. and hopefully they'll be able to stay in my bank for many years to come.
Nice. Another thing that I've been really into lately, well, I've been actually writing about this, is credit cards and dealing with credit cards and credit in your 20s. Did you get a credit card when you were 18?
I probably had my first credit card probably when I turned 21, and when I started working, after I graduated college, I started working and got a credit card almost immediately. But I think it's really important to be very careful with the credit cards, especially in college and coming out of college. All of a sudden you have this big credit limit and you're able to spend, but then don't forget that at the end of the month you really have to pay it back. And if you're going to be...
Come on.
Of course. And I think it's very important to remember that this isn't just an unlimited account. I think if you act as if it's a debit card and you're only spending what you have in your account or what you can really afford, you're going to be way ahead of the game. And it's great to use credit for the rewards. If you can use it like that, then it's fantastic. But if you're going to be using it as kind of a payment that you're going to try and catch up on later in life, if you've got a $3,000 payment that you know you can't pay this month, the credit card interest rates are very high. So it's a very slippery slope that you could be taking.
It's funny you mentioned that you should use it like a debit card, because that makes total sense. Like, if you have the money in a savings account, then, yeah, it makes sense. I get cash back. I'm actually going to transfer my credit card soon. But right now, I get cash back. So if I'm paying for a trip for, like, 10 of us to go somewhere, I tell everybody, you know, give me the cash, I put it on my card.
Absolutely. You get these rewards at 1% or 2%. It definitely adds up. And I think I'm right about to cash in my $300 of rewards, plus they'll add on another 25%. So all of a sudden, it's a free $75 I'm getting, and I didn't really do anything. All I've been doing is paying with the card instead of cash or instead of a debit card, which I think is great.
So what do you think are the biggest mistakes that young people make? Like, let's say I was 19 years old. I got a credit card. I don't really know what's going on. I got a free T-shirt, you know, on campus. So I got this credit card or a free donut. Like, what do you think is the biggest mistake I'm likely to make?
Yeah, I think that signing up with if you're signing up in order to get a free T-shirt or some free merchandise, it's probably a bad idea. I think that's your first mistake. But once you have these credit cards in the hands of college and teenagers, I think it's just a big mistake to think that you all of a sudden have a bigger budget. I think it's important to always be budgeting the amount of money that you're willing to spend each month and not be looking at what you can spend. I think you should be comfortable with your spending and not go overboard. Don't try and meet your friend's expectations. You should really be looking at your own expectations and what you're comfortable with.
So let's say I got my credit card, the iPad 2 comes out, I buy that. I want to go down to Mexico next month, I get that. I get my bill, I realize I'm $2,000 in debt. What do I do at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a terrible situation to get into, and that's why it's so important to have these internships and jobs over the summer for college students. And if you're in $2,000 of debt, and that'll just grow at 20%, at least 20%, if you're in college on these credit cards. So you really have to get to work, start paying it off immediately, because the sooner you start paying, the less the total bill will be. If you wait 3 years to pay it and you're paying the minimum each month, it'll just continue to grow and grow and grow, and you'll never really be able to catch up.
That's true. And I was just wondering, because I'm here in Canada once again, how's the new Credit Card Act, and has it helped out, or has it been a positive overall?
I haven't noticed too many changes. I think that they're not allowed to sell on student campuses anymore.
So are you supposed to get a free T-shirt now?
Right. So that's the downside, but I think the upside is that on the bottom of credit card statements, they're now telling you if you pay the minimum each month, how long it'll take you to pay off your debt. And I think that is something that's really great to have, and it might be a little stunning for some people how much interest they'll be paying over the life of the loan. But if you take a real look and you're saying, wow, I can either pay an extra $100 each month now and be able to pay it off in 6 months, or I can wait and pay off the $15 minimum each month, and I'll be paying this for about 7 years. I think it's kind of jarring to look at, and I think hopefully that'll help a lot of people get serious about their debt.
Yeah, it's funny. Cause I remember I was in a first year finance class, and we did a calculation on, let's say, like, you bought a flat screen TV on credit card, and you made the minimum payment. I believe it was like 6 years or something it would take you to pay it off.
Yeah, it's really looking at the minimum payment is not the way to go. You should be setting your own minimum payment, because the one that they're telling you is literally the minimum you can make, and it's not in your best interest to be doing it. It might be in their best interest for you to be, if you actually pay the minimum, they're making so much money on interest that you should be really setting your goals for how much you, if you're already in debt, you should be setting goals for how much you can afford to pay each month.
Awesome. Daniel, thank you so much for your time. I know you're a busy guy. I'm going to let you go. Could you just tell us where we could find you online?
Just sweatingthebigstuff.com, and I'm on Twitter @Daniel Packer.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.